Orca stinks. That's the first thing that came into my head when the announcement was made. I still think it stinks. It's the biggest, it's the most costly, and it's the riskiest decision ever taken by any Australian government, short of governments committing us to war, and it should not be allowed to stand. So it's a great pleasure to join you at this important forum in Melbourne to acknowledge the great activism that's emanated not only from this building, from the labour movement, but from the community in general, because it is very, very important that more and more people become aware of the substance of the decision. To be clear about many aspects of it, which my other fraternal colleagues on the stage will no doubt explain, under AUKUS, Australia will be the only non-nuclear nation that is actually in possession of nuclear submarines. There are many other aspects of AUKUS which are abhorrent and objectionable, and the opposition to it isn't confined to one member of the Labor Party, a former member of the government or a cabinet minister. Former Labor Prime Minister Keating strenuously opposes AUKUS, as does former Foreign Minister Carr, also the former Premier of New South Wales. Former Prime Minister of the Coalition, Malcolm Turnbull, opposes AUKUS. The calls for a thorough parliamentary inquiry into that decision, which should take place, were supported by myself, by Arthur Rorris, who's here with us today, by former WA Premier and Federal Parliamentarian Carmen Lawrence, from Doug Cameron, from Senators David Shoebridge and Penny Ormond-Payne, from the former Chief of the Air Force, Air Marshal Ray Fennell, from Major General Michael Smith, the former Deputy Commander of the UN Peacekeeping Operations in Timor, a slew of academics, foreign policy and defence experts, including Hugh White, who many of you will hear on ABC Radio, have raised objections to AUKUS, so we are not alone. The basic and major objection to AUKUS lies in the aspects of the arrangement which see us reversing our foreign policy and defence posture that's been generally in place since World War II. We're going from a focus of direct defence, as is currently constituted, to a concentration on forward defence. In the words of the submission for the inquiry and the statement made, forward defence, in brackets, attack against a specific adversary where the grounds for identifying that adversary are unclear and unsupported. Additionally, that statement noted that Australia does not have the necessary design or manufacturing skills to operate nuclear-powered submarines, and defence has the worst record of delivery on any matter of material acquisition as can be imagined. So the thought that even if it were to go ahead, it could be done in time and at cost is fanciful. Additionally, AUKUS brings with it the challenge of managing weapons-grade radioactive waste, for which there is no plan, I repeat, zero plan for safe management. And so it goes on. Now, I'd like to think that the current members of the Federal Parliament, Labor members in the caucus and in the Cabinet, would be mindful of these glaring deficiencies. And it's hard to believe that they were fully informed or had the opportunity to thoroughly consider the ramifications of such a momentous decision. What papers were presented to caucus members and to cabinet? Which independent expert analysis was provided? What detailed plans as to how AUKUS would be executed, or the rationale for undertaking that foreign policy reverse U-turn provided at all? I suspect the answer is very little, but we don't know, and we should know. And of course, tragically, we've been here before. The British nuclear tests at Maralinga and the Montebello Islands spelled out quite eloquently to the First Peoples where the priorities of the national government of the day lay. And modern Australia, as I define it, has an insecure backstory of following major imperial partners into ill-judged and, in the case of Iraq, illegal wars. And that backstory is still very much with us. Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan. And whilst defence planners and the political consensus that we needed the protection of a major strategic partner did make some sense, the unquestioning acquiescence to that strategic partner's own foreign policy intentions and the lurch to war that that has entailed in the past, post-1945, has been nothing short of pathetic and against our national interest. Now, I would argue, unlike some of you in this room, that we should have a robust and mutually supportive relationship with the United States. Notwithstanding its many apparent flaws, yes, its values in some ways are closer than many others to ours, but at the same time, allies in consideration of the literal defence of a continent such as Australia and the relationship with those allies is a matter of great national importance. Yet, the rise of China, the stronger economic and political clout of neighbours in the region, and the continuing US failures in foreign policy adventurism. Instead of recalibrating our defence policy to take into account factors like those, we've simply completely and absolutely thrown our lot in, unquestioningly, it seems, with the United States. Howard famously encouraged President Bush into the illegal war in Iraq and was so named deputy sheriff, to which the response was, hey, we're no deputy, we're a real sheriff. Morrison was that guy that President Biden couldn't remember the name of, and now, regrettably, Prime Minister Albanese has signed on to AUKUS. Remember, the initial AUKUS agreement was conceived in secret. Morrison betrayed his own colleagues and then he betrayed the French government. And yet it was rapidly acquiesced to by a new Labor government. To think that you can design and build something as complex and potentially lethal as a nuclear-powered attack submarine in the 21st century in three countries over a period of decades at a cost in well excess of $368 billion is fanciful. It's a three-ring circus and it should be opposed by all Australians who think carefully and care a lot about our national interest. I want to now talk about the fact that there's a challenge for those who oppose AUKUS. Because the challenge is not simply to say that we believe the money could and should be better spent on more pressing priorities. In fact, I happen to share that view. I think some of that money could be better spent. And the challenge isn't to point out to anyone in the public arena the follies of current American policy and the potential destabilisation that might come about if Mr. Trump becomes president again. The challenge is to describe and imagine an Australia where defence is taken seriously, but we're not in relationships such as the one we find ourselves in with AUKUS. So it's not enough for us, in my view, to simply oppose it and respond with very fair statements about how the money could be better spent. It's incumbent upon us, and we do have thinkers, and there are some in this room and others, to think deeply about what the defence of Australia really would look like if we weren't in an AUKUS. Because this decision can be successfully opposed and rendered nugatory, but only by a large proportion of the Australian population who takes very seriously the defence of Australia coming on side. I want to quickly say before I finish up that something that's even more important in a way than the folly of the AUKUS decision is already underway as a consequence of that decision. So not only have we turned our defence posture, robust, potentially benign, cooperative where possible, to an attack posture, dangerous, destabilising, who, where, when, but already AUKUS sees the increasing integration of US and Australian defence policy and operations. It's called interoperability. And we're already seeing the consequences of that interoperability, whether it's from legislation passing through the Parliament, which reduces the information available to the public, whether it's restrictions on freedom and freedom of assembly, whether it's clearly positing the use of the Stirling base in Western Australia for submarines, which will roam out to the South China Sea, or the B-52s to be based in Darwin. This represents a sellout of Australia's sovereign interests. It's almost, but not quite complete, and we cannot and we must not let it stand. Sometimes, friends, citizens in countries have to save the nation as they see it or secure its interests from the leaders themselves, by themselves. And this is one of those times. I don't underestimate the will and the intention and the values of the Australian people who, organising together in mass movements and campaigns, have done that in the past. The campaign to prevent the mining at Jabiluka, the great work done by ICAN that started in this very city on the Treaty for the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons stand out. Nor do I underestimate the desire that all Australians have for a safer future, one that they can look at with some confidence, one that they can bestow upon their kids and their grandkids. And they would understand how high the stakes are, and they would also understand that no matter what the current government says about safeguards, about agreements, about observing any amount of policy deemed to try and manage the problems of AUKUS, this government cannot bind the future decisions or actions of a consequent government. And when I think about the coalition government, the Liberal National Party government, nuclear has been a barely disguised fantasy that they have never been able to wait to embrace. So to finish, the people do have the power. It's a cliche that has meaning. We need to give the people the information. We need to summon our imagination. We need to cooperate broadly. We need to build alliances. We need to organise. We need to educate. We need to pressure and we need to persuade. We need to get free of the blight of AUKUS. Now's the time to do that. That decision cannot stand. Thank you for listening.